so happy to be here together with you. Today, I'd like to introduce your co-hosts. My name is Dr. Rick Klopfein, and I'm here with my associate, Dr. Susan Kolb. Are you there, Susan?
I am.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And we love our radio show for a number of different reasons. First of all, we approach it as our temple, and so we like going to temple. Second of all, it's social time for Susan and I, because we get to spend an hour talking to the most interesting people, really just about anybody who's written a book that fascinates us, we get to talk to them. And we find this very valuable personally because we pick topics that are of personal interest to us, and professionally in our medical practices and our healing work. We work out of sister practices, Plasticos, which is Dr. Kolb's plastic and reconstructive surgery practice here in Atlanta, and Dr. Kolb's holistic practice, Millennium Healthcare. I'm one of the physicians at Millennium Healthcare. I'm a gynecologist who's been practicing in Atlanta for about 20 years. And we're both interested in conventional medicine, alternative medicine, spiritual medicine, healing, and due to those interests, we have many different topics on our show. One personal interest of mine for many years is the study of shamanism, a study of indigenous healing practices. I've always approached it from a cross-cultural context as it was introduced to me. Of course, looking at things cross-culturally is only something that we as individuals have had the opportunity to do maybe within our generation or recent generations. The story that I read today, The Jaguar That Roams the Mind by Robert Tyndall, an Amazonian plant spirit odyssey, is a story that comes to me from someone who's lived in my world, who has visited another world, but been able to relate it to me because of our common context. And we're going to be talking about plant medicine and how plants have been intimate with humans throughout history. And we're going to talk a little bit about the modern dilemma and how through plants we can be drawn back into an enchanted universe, because I think there is a disconnection from the natural world and a loss of enchantment. And this Okay, so we have a loss of enchantment we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about specifically a magic tea, a sacred tea that comes from the Amazon called ayahuasca. And we're going to talk about how through the wisdom of plants, and this plant in particular, there can be a re-realization of our connection to the natural world and the cosmos, and that this might be of benefit to us not only personally, but as a culture. I'd like to introduce Robert Tyndall, who's a writer, a musician, and a traveler, who took a very interesting journey through the Amazonian area to understand plants, and ayahuasca in particular. It's a little bit hard to know where to begin, but I'd like to welcome you, Robert.
Thank you.
And maybe you could talk a little bit as introduction to our listening audience about what ayahuasca is.
Okay. Well, good morning, everybody.
Thank you for being with us.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me on your show. I thought your introduction was very clear. And I'd be happy to introduce ayahuasca.
I'd like you to feel free.
Mm-hmm.
In our conversation today. I'd like you to feel free to take direct the conversation and to start where you feel best.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. I'd actually like to give a little bit of a preamble, then,
please,
if I may.
Yes.
The reason I wrote The Jaguar That Roams the Mind is I wanted to give a more intimate account of the healing experiences that come with working with plants. particularly what are called entheogenic plants. That may not be the best term, but these are plants that reveal the divine within.
It may be the best term we have right now.
Yeah. And so the way that the book began was through pilgrimages that I was making to different parts of the world. And in the process, while I was in Morocco, in the Sahara Desert, I was working on a book, and I had a kind of vision that I wanted to follow up. And it ended up taking me all the way over to the Amazonian rainforest. And the book is intended to be an account of a journey from this world into the other world and back again. But what I'm trying to show is how pilgrimage is really a healing practice. You know, we do a lot of tourism now, but we've kind of lost the art of pilgrimage, which involves a degree of self-renunciation and a kind of goal of opening yourself radically to the other, to something bigger than yourself. And so that's the framework of the book. And the reason that I really wanted to concentrate on plant medicines was because we either had very good anthropological accounts of shamanism in the Amazon rain basin, and they've been getting much better in recent years, or we had kind of more New Agey accounts that may not have been very well written of mystical states and speculation about the nature of the plant medicines. But no one had just written a good traveler's account that took both the inner and the outer worlds of working with ayahuasca. Because basically when you're in shamanism, you're in a kind of magical realistic world. The usual boundaries between self and other become very permeable. And so the goal of the book is to take people on the journey with me, and it doesn't offer many conclusions, but it offers a lot of experiences of how healing works, both for myself and for the people that were seeking treatments of various kinds or exploring themselves in that world. So it's meant to be a good read, primarily. It's just a good story.
So I'd like to comment on your saying it's a good read.
Hmm.
It is a good read. So I happen to very much like the type of book that you wrote. I found it a good read on many different levels. First of all, I think your prose and your style of writing to me is just wonderful. I found I could read it on the level of an adventure story if I wanted to. But it was a very different type of adventure story than just worldly adventures.
Right.
But it was certainly, I'm always interested in when I read people's accounts of experiences such as yours, how they relate to my world.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, I mean, because of, you know, this magic of ayahuasca that I have watched with great interest start to permeate out into so many different cultures, from the jungle seeded out, sort of like almost like roots growing through, you know, sometimes just seeking the path of least resistance, you know, and but it's growing out, and even to the point that this sacred medicine is not seen as medicine by our consensus reality of the United States.
I'm so grateful that you're framing it in the context of the sacred.
The sacred is something that's worthy of respect and reverence.
Well, profoundly, because the thing you learn in the Amazon rain basin is that the plant life of the world is sentient. And we tend to miss the intelligence of the rest of the inhabitants of the planet up here because of our methodology, where we try to reduce everything down to their molecular constituents. But shamanism has a completely different approach, where they understand the molecules of the plants, or the synergistic effects of the molecular structures of plants, by relating to the plant spirits first and foremost. That's a completely different paradigm. It's totally off of our cultural map.
Yes.
And so one of the best ways that we in the West can frame an approach to that is to be reverential.
Reverential in the sense of approaching it with reverence, so that meaning
deep respect.
With respect.
Yes, for the mystery of the world, basically. If you go, for myself, going into the world of the jungle, deep jungle, and shamanism. At one point in the book, I described the Amazon as being like a teeming witch's brew of evolution. The world is so vast in that, especially in that area, that you end up rather sophisticated in one way, in that you have to sort a lot of things out. You don't come back a believer. But on the other hand, you come back with a very deep sense of reverence for the natural world and its powers.
So I keep coming back to this feeling of the disconnection from the natural world that I've experienced through my life and the culture that I grew up in, and how I see that as a physician and a healer impacting my patients.
Yes.
Our disconnection from the natural light cycles of the sun coming up and the sun going down and it being dark at night and light during the day. Our disconnection from the turn of the seasons, our disconnection of where our food comes from, our disconnection of how we use things and how they, the chain of impact before they got to us and after they go from us. Our disconnection from seeing ourselves as part of the world, as part of nature, as part of the plan, not being separate, above, or, and the experiences that are engendered by entheogens, by sacred plants that have been used by multiple different indigenous cultures on different continents, through millennia, are all about being the experience. Even when a modern person approaches those things, even in an urban setting, with reverence, the experience is moving back towards feeling connected.
And that's one of the things that we've seen, that ayahuasca, the whole issue right now, I think a lot of it is of translation. How can you integrate the experiences of the medicine and the practice of shamanic medicine into the West? And it's a very complicated issue.
Very.
But one of the things that we've consistently seen is that the work that ayahuasca does with Westerners is reconnect them with a deeper sense of how they are nature. How your body resonates with all of the life of the rest of the planet. You're part of it. You're evolving in it, and it's your matrix. It's what you come out of. And so it's kind of like radical environmentalism comes out of drinking this plant, because when you get it in your body, you get a hit of the power that's driving the force of nature through all of evolution. And how can you destroy the planet after having an experience like this?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, much of the patterns of our lives seem very just sort of disconnected and trippy, abstracted after encountering this intimacy within yourself.
Well, I think that intimacy, when you move so deeply into that intimacy through the grace of entheogens or sacred plant medicine, it's so astounding and so overwhelming that I think you're right, re-entry can be very rocky.
Yeah, our reentry was very complicated because we had been living in deep jungle for months. And when you're there, I sometimes had the feeling of being with my wife, Susanna, of us being Adam and Eve, again, beneath the rainforest canopy. It was, the world subsided. And the immediacy of experience, especially when we were in the fasting phase of our work with our teacher, was so profound that when we came back to Western culture, it was super confusing just to watch the straight lines that people had set up that they work within, and how there is a sense of everyone living inside of a box and a lot of difficulty in trying to break through the walls of their perception in order to talk with them. It was very strong culture shock.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you wanted me to talk about ayahuasca a little bit. Why don't I talk
about
it?
Yeah. I wanted to lead back to exactly what it is and how amazing it is that in the diversity of the rainforest, the indigenous people were able to come up with this. Please tell us about it.
Okay. Well, let me start with your last point. When you're in the rainforest, it's a mass of green. Everywhere you look is green. And there is every kind of form and shape of green in there. And so how the indigenous people, the inhabitants of the rainforest, discovered that if you took a vine called ayahuasca, which means in Quechua, the vine of the spirits, vine of the dead, or vine of the souls, and you cook it with another plant called chacruna, which is actually a member of the coffee tree or the coffee family. It's a very beautiful little tree, very delicate leaves, a lovely plant. And if you combine the two and you cook it for about 3 days till you get a very thick syrupy extract and you drink it, the two plants together have a synergistic effect where the DMT naturally occurs in our body, and that's the visionary component of ayahuasca. Now, DMT is in the chacruna plant, not in the vine.
It's in the leaves.
It's in the leaves. And we actually have DMT in our system all the time, but the DMT, we don't end up flooded with visions because there are these things called MAO in our stomach, which break down the DMT before it can reach our brains. But we already have the molecule in our body, and this is one of the wonderful things about the ayahuasca plant brew, is it's not introducing anything that's foreign to our bodies, into us, unlike LSD, for example.
Yeah.
So it's a very gentle work that the plant does with you in that sense. There's less of an impact on your system. And how they discovered this synergy of if you combine the ayahuasca vine with the chacruna plant and have the suppress the MAOs in the stomach, which is what ayahuasca does, though
so
it has other molecules too that are psychoactive, yeah.
The vine prevents the MAOs from breaking down the DMT.
Exactly. Then the DMT, that chacruna, the one that paints the visions as the shamans sing, is able to cross the blood-brain barrier, and the brain loves it. And so it gets plugged into the serotonin receptors in our brain, and we have a visionary experience. Now, through trial and error, there's no way that they could have done this. Now, there's too many plants in the jungle to combine and try out.
And
the fatality rate would probably be way too high.
And tell us about the taste of the brew. It's not something they would have done for
not for, not for its good taste either. Yeah. It's the bitterest medicine I have ever drunk.
Right. So it's not something you would take because it tastes good.
Nor would you take it necessarily for its physical effects because it's a purgative.
Right.
And so it's very common for people to vomit on ayahuasca at a certain stage of a ceremony or to get diarrhea.
Yes.
That's
considered actually a beneficial aspect to the experience.
Absolutely. So let me just complete the thing on ayahuasca.
Thank you.
That, again, it leads back to the indigenous understanding of how to approach the issue of healing and how to find medicines by using plants. Someone communicated with the spirit in order to understand how to combine these two plants. Now, what a spirit is, you know, people have been trying to work out for thousands of years. I'm not even going to attempt to try to define it here. But that's what they say, and that's what they now do. If someone is sick, sometimes the shaman will just recognize the symptoms and will prescribe something from the indigenous pharmacopoeia. They may also recognize it's a Western-introduced disease and send them to the hospital in town. And they may also realize that this is something that they need to consult the spirits that they work with. And perhaps in a dream, they will see the plant in the jungle where it's located that they need to go harvest. And they'll go out and get it, or the shaman's apprentice will go and get it, and they'll prepare the mixture and give it to the patient. And it's fascinating. Like, people have documented diabetes being successfully treated in this kind of way. Leprosy. You know, the cures for many, many diseases that stump Western science are there in the jungle, I believe, and a lot of other scientists believe, and I'm not a scientist.
I think it's, in my medical practice and healing practice, I always find that if the database that I'm drawing from is not providing sufficient positive effect, so if I'm treating somebody with a condition with my regular Western medical skills and what I understand is not helping, and it's not clear what's going on, sometimes it's very helpful to approach things from a completely different database, completely different paradigm. So I might suggest, well, you need to go see a traditional Chinese medicine doctor.
Mm.
Or an Ayurvedic physician, and have completely different eyes look at the situation.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, and shamans have the same sort of pragmatism in their approach, too. I've actually gone and gotten antibiotics in the jungle because what I had couldn't be treated with the bark of the particular tree I was drinking, and the shaman took me into town to a laboratory, and I went in and they took a stool sample, and then I was prescribed, you know, the antibiotic that was appropriate, and, you know, got handled that way.
Now, really, we're discussing right now a very specific type of shamanism practice, is that correct?
Yes, we're talking about vegetalismo, which is a Peruvian form of shamanism that developed when the mestizo people, who are a mixture of Spanish and indigenous blood, went back into the jungle and began apprenticing with the shamans who were working in the deep jungle. And so what developed was something syncretic.
Can you describe what syncretic is for our audience?
Sure. Let me give an example of it. That's when, for example, Catholicism becomes combined with deep jungle shamanism. So it wouldn't be at all unusual for our teacher and for many shamans in Peru, vegetalistas, they are called in Spanish, to sing in ceremonies both to the Virgin Mary and to the boa constrictor, for example, or to the jaguar.
So it's a blending of elements from different...
Well, it's really interesting. When you're in the cosmology yourself, it doesn't seem syncretic. It all seems to make perfect sense.
Yeah.
When you're outside and you look in, you say, oh, okay, well, here are the Catholic elements, and here are the elements that come from here and there. But when you're in it, it is, in a way, profoundly Catholic, because you discover that there's the same relationship with spirits going on in Iquitos and in Pucallpa and in Tarapoto. And as you go from shaman to shaman, you recognize that they have a very deeply shared experience. This isn't just arbitrary. But you're still in the position of being the befuddled anthropologist trying to figure out, okay, how does this all connect together? And probably to understand that would take one a lifetime, and you still probably wouldn't get there.
And then there's, this medicine is manifesting in so many different ways and so many different people. Talk a little bit about the churches that have developed.
Oh, I'd love to.
It's so fascinating to me that it manifests in so many different ways.
Yeah. Well, my first encounters actually were with the Brazilian churches of ayahuasca, which are called Daime. And I did a pilgrimage down there through Rio de Janeiro and then all the way to the other side of Brazil to the state of Acre, where the whole Santo Daime movement began. And the Santo Daime movement started with a Brazilian rubber tapper named Maestro Iraneu. And he had been working in the forest, and he encountered the indigenous people there, and he drank ayahuasca with them. And it's funny, the rubber tappers called the ayahuasca visions the Cinema de Indio, because they'd seen the movie houses in Rio de Janeiro and gone and watched these flickering images from other lands. And then they went into the jungle, and they drank with the shamans, and then they saw flickering images from other lands. So when they saw the form of communication that was going on in these ceremonies with ayahuasca, they dubbed it Cinema de Indio. And Iraneu went beyond that. He didn't just have some visions, but he began to really connect with the intrinsic healing powers of this plant and the spiritual entities within it. And he ended up going deep into the jungle for a long diet, which is that's one of the three pillars of Amazonian shamanism we talk about. Diet is a withdrawal from the world and a kind of aesthetic regime where you absolutely reduce your food intake, your sensorial intake, to a complete minimum in order to receive the communications from the plants as powerfully as possible. So when he went through that phase, he had a vision, and he came out, and this amazing church evolved where people dance, and they'll do it in the pattern of a star, for example, and they'll all wear these special uniforms. They're called fardados, which basically has a military connotation, and they sing hymns that have been received by the padrinos and madrinas of the tradition. And they meet once a week or once every 2 weeks, and they gather, and they have the most remarkable cosmology that's come out of this. It's a combination of Afro-Brazilian spiritual elements from Umbanda and Candomblé and indigenous material and Catholic material. The Virgin Mary is very important for them. And you go there, and, you know, on one level, it looks like a cabaret when you go in. And on a whole other level, you realize there's something very profound and mysterious going on here. And people have studied it.
This is mainstream Brazilian.
This is in Brazil, yeah.
This is mainstream population.
It is.
Yeah.
It is, and it's legal.
Yeah.
In Brazil, was a challenge to ayahuasca at a certain point, and the UDV, another syncretic church, came out with a very strong defense, and it's been extensively studied. And so what they found is people suffering from depression, violence, addiction, have been very successfully treated in this work. It's highly effective on a number of levels, including very powerful healing experiences with things like cancer and other diseases. And so the Brazilian government was actually able to go in and objectively study it from a scientific perspective. And when they did, they said, okay, in the proper setting with proper guides, you know, the usual criteria that you need to establish with any kind of work like this, this is a beneficial tool. for our culture to have. And so it continues now in Brazil with the legal blessing of the government.
And so when the government was looking into whether these churches should be legal, they did formal studies, as you're
yes.
saying, including medical researchers from the U.S. who went down and participated. They actually
yep.
found that the congregants were more adjusted, had lower rates of alcoholism, and
mm-hmm.
it seemed to be not just okay, but doing very well.
Yes.
And benefiting.
Yeah.
And it's just so interesting to me because it's such a different construct than the jungle. And the churches now are also extending out beyond Brazil.
Yes, there are churches now operating in the United States.
So,
yeah.
Which is going to bring to a head more and more this whole issue about what is sacred.
And we've already seen it in the Supreme Court.
Yes. With the UDV.
And the UDV won.
Yes.
The first step of the battle. They are now legally allowed to continue with their work with the plant sacrament, but there will be more challenges. But the fact that the Supreme Court looked at the issue from a lot of different angles and said, you know something, the chances of ayahuasca becoming a recreational drug is like next to none. And they saw the clear parallel with the Native American church with the use of peyote. And so I think the Supreme Court did a good job on this one.
As a first step.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think legal sanctions or having the plant legal would be such a boon for us in the West, because then we would really be able to study it and understand it. And as it is, I think more abuses of the plant is actually going to occur under conditions where it's illegal.
And
because of the misunderstandings that can be brought to it.
Yeah, I'd like to address that a little bit more. I think what we'll do is take a break here. This is Temple of Health Radio Show, and this is your host, Dr. Rick Klofein, and somewhere back there is Dr. Susan, and we're talking with Robert Tindall, the jaguar that roams the mind, an Amazonian plant spirit odyssey. We're going to take a quick break and be back for more discussion.
Headaches, back pain, migraines, joint pain, nothing worse than the nagging, unending discomfort of daily aches and pains. If you have pain and are looking for more natural solutions to eliminate your pain, Millennium Healthcare is for you. Millennium Healthcare's professionals will work for you. For help or more information on natural pain relief, call Millennium Healthcare at 770-390-0012. That's 770-390-0012. Millennium Healthcare. Pain relief naturally.
So you had plastic surgery. What was it like?
It was great. Don't get me wrong. It was surgery, but the doctors and staff at Plastico's were terrific.
Honey, you look like $1 million. You actually went to Plastico's and had it done.
Why don't you? Plastic surgery is outpatient, and you'll only be out of work a few days. I love what Plastico's did for me, and looking my best is an investment that pays in so many ways. The help you get from the professionals at Plastico's is a bargain.
Plastico's, 770-457-4677. Mention this ad for a free consultation. Financing is available, 770-457-4677. You had plastic surgery, Bill?
You bet I did. I got tired of the wrinkles around my eyes and decided to have Plastico's do something about them.
But I didn't think men had plastic surgery.
Get with it, Bob. Men want to look their best, too. There's nothing wrong with getting a little help from Plastico's to look on top of your game. A lot of guys are doing it, my friend.
Well, I don't know about this.
Look, you see the difference Plastico's made with me. I look better and I feel better. My Plastico's surgery was an investment in me.
So where is Plastico's?
Plastico's is in Dunwoody. Plastico's is staffed by pros who guarantee you personal attention. The Plastico's number is 770-457-4677. Mention this ad for a free consultation. Financing is available. 770-457-4677.
And welcome back to Temple of Health Radio Show. Temple of Health Radio Show is brought to you by Plastic Coast Plastic and Reconstructive Surgery and Millennium Healthcare. Our sister practices in Atlanta, we're happy to provide you a service. You can reach us at 770-457-4677. On the web at www.plasticos.com. We're happy to bring you our Temple of Health radio show. We have upcoming shows in December. In December 6th, we have Jeffrey Smith and his book, Genetic Roulette. On the 13th of December, we'll have John Barron, MD, and his book, Lessons from the Miracle Doctors. The 20th of December will be Christine Page, MD. We'll have her back, her new book, 2012, The Galactic Center. And then on the 27th will be Dr. Bob Sears, MD, his book, The Vaccine Book. We're taking breaks for other events at Plastic Coast and Millennium Healthcare for the month of December. Please call for services, plastic and reconstructive surgery, or a medical spa. We have licensed estheticians to serve you. We have a variety of practitioners to provide you care, including classical homeopathy, psychotherapy, and hypnotherapy. Dr. Mike doing chiropractic allergy elimination. I'm happy to see women for holistic gynecology specializing in menopausal transition. Dr. Paul Murphy, our traditional Chinese medicine practitioner, and other practitioners such as Dr. Nari Ford, whose family practice to serve you. You can reach us at 770-457-4677. We're talking today with Robert Tyndall and his book, The Jaguar That Roams the Mind, An Amazonian Plant Spirit Odyssey. His website, roamingthemind.com, and also your blog I'm finding very interesting.
Thank you.
You recently had a blog about ayahuasca tourism.
Right.
And I think it's an interesting topic because I think it blends with what always is presenting itself to me is how this wisdom relates back to me. Here, in the urban setting, I'm not certain I see right now that I'm going to make the same journey you made at this time. So I think, you know, I think this whole aspect of people wanting these experiences and searching out these experiences, part of people wanting to feel more connected. And the question is, does that require a trip to the jungle or, you know, and what are the dangers of, so this medicine is sacred, especially when it's held in a sacred container, when it's honored and held with respect and guided by someone who knows the territory.
Right.
But what of the same brew taken in other contexts that may not hold that intent?
Well, you know, it's easy and it's tempting to try to draw a hard line among things. And I don't want to do that. But there's some things that I notice among us, the Westerners who go down to the Amazon, and I receive the I see the responses of people in the Amazon to it. And then there's also what the plant may be up to with people. And with that, you don't know. So let me just try to sketch the issue. I think that as Westerners, we have a difficult time understanding the difference between having experiences and doing a disciplined work with something. And so what is going on is people are going down to the Amazon to have ayahuasca jungle experience, right? Now, okay, the problem is how much of our own consumerist mentality are we already bringing to this, Are we seeking healing? Are we seeking something responsibly where we're making sure that we go to reputable people, that we support them in turn, that we make sure we don't over-harvest the plant? There's all these issues involved of our own need to be reciprocal with the people in the Amazon. Now, the problem is if we're going down seeking an experience, at this point, there are a lot of pseudo-shamans that will give you an experience. And I understand these things actually happen through tour guides and through the Internet, and the whole thing is kind of creepy. But there's been an infrastructure set up where someone goes down, and they're taken to someone who claims he's a shaman, but really he's not. What he is a businessman who has learned how to mix the plants together, and what is often happening is they're putting strong doses of Datura into the plant mixture. And if anybody knows anything about local weed, Datura, it's not a substance that you want to be taking. And so to make sure people get this real kick that they can go back and tell their friends about, they may put things in the brew that will not be good for you. There's also been, there are just a lot of issues of power, abuse of female participants. There's seduction because Datura makes you very suggestionable. And even, you know, people who may squeak through will come back with an experience that the shaman has manufactured for them, kind of like the Wizard of Oz. But what did you get out of it? How are you going to translate this? And I think that's where one of the distinctions about how you approach the medicine of the Amazon arises. Are you looking to put another notch on your psychonaut gun? Or are you going down to do authentic healing work?
I think this is a very important distinction that you draw between collecting experiences.
Right.
And doing and taking an experience and integrating it into your life so it manifests practically.
Okay, and again, I don't want to draw hard and fast lines, and I'm making a false dichotomy. We've got both inside of us.
Yeah, but absolutely.
We need to be aware
of
both inside of us.
Yep.
And
thank
the
you.
Other
and
side
you did frame the before you started. You did frame it in the context that far be it from you to understand.
Yeah, this
how
is
the
bigger than
the ways of the plant and the you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I you know not to be in a judgmental mode. To relate a story from my personal life about probably about where are we? Okay, about 10, 12 years ago, a dear friend of mine who a woman who was a friend of mine who I was getting to know well went down to the Amazon, spent a week down in the Amazon, and 2 days before she at the end of the week, 2 days before she was ready to leave, she did a ayahuasca ceremony. And had a very deep, powerful experience.
Oh.
And 24 hours later was rushing to the airport to come home.
Yeah.
And worked with me. Luckily she knew me and knew that I,
could help her with integration.
Could help her with integration, thank you.
Yeah.
And we just spent a lot of time together over a period of, you know, about 6 months and, you know, and it
right.
helped just having somebody who understood.
Oh, totally. I mean,
just to sit with her, just talk, or just
people.
Sit and, you know.
Yeah, I do.
and this is a typical kind of like, you know, I've seen this on more than one occasion. And in the long run, it was amazing teaching that she received.
Yes. Yeah, this is powerful stuff. It's not to be taken lightly. And
no, but
integration is such an important thing to think about. You really need to take care of yourself.
Robert, in your book you describe facing your shadow. And that would be an example our listeners could understand some of the depth of what comes out of these journeys.
Right. Yeah, I had had a history of drug abuse, of addiction to alcohol and homelessness in my childhood, a broken family, and of course it's the family's now re-knit pretty miraculously, but it really fell apart when I was a kid, and so I ended up growing up in jails and shelters and and I thought I'd dealt with these contents when I began making my journeys to the Amazon, but it turned out at a certain point that I had to turn around and face it and really reckon with it in a completely deeper level than I had thought possible. And so what I track in the book is how eventually my ceremonies took me all the way back into the womb in order to show me how at a certain point in my development as a fetus, the beginning of the trajectory that had driven me out of the home and into the substance abuses and, you know, very close to death, had been initiated all the way back there in the matrix of my becoming. And it was really interesting that when I came back, I was able to relate that story to my father, who's a very conservative man. And he listened to me very respectfully and quietly. And when I was done, he said to me, "I don't believe a word of it, but I've never heard anything that explains what happened to our family better."
Hmm.
Yeah. So there was a lot of discipline that I had to bring every ounce of discipline that I had in order to approach these issues of addiction for myself. And there are programs going on in Peru that are slowly developing. One of the pioneering centers is called Takawasi in Tarapoto, Peru. And there they are working with treating severe addiction, people who've been on cocaine or its derivatives, for example, for a decade or so. And they have a lot of success, but they know very well that this requires the patient to go all the way in. It's a spiritual journey for them, and it's a very difficult one. It takes months and months, and it's very hard work. It's going through a purgatory, basically. There's no quick fixes.
Well, that's why you need a guide, too.
That is why you need a guide.
Because it can take you places that you need help integrating.
So, yeah. Speaking of the guide, I'd like you to speak to Icarus, the songs that the shamans sing, because when she says you need a guide, in my experience, the songs guide you and guide us, and it's amazing how they can guide an individual and guide a session and move it into different spaces. And could you describe what Icarus are?
I'll do my best. The best person to talk to about this is my wife, Susanna, because she did her dissertation on the Icarus while we were down there.
Oh, maybe we could get her on one time.
You might be able to talk her into it. But an Icarus it's sung, in one variation or another. These are songs that are sung throughout the Amazon, and I think that they're common to most forms of shamanism. They are the bridge between this world and the next world that are used for different purposes. For people who are still very much connected to their indigenous world, Icarus will be sung throughout the day, really. When you're hunting, when you're courting someone, cooking, all kinds of purposes, you can bring a song into it. But in Amazonian, the vegetalismo, the the etymology of the word actually is, it's from Quechua, and it means to blow smoke in order to heal. Tobacco, the Amazonian tobacco is used a lot in ceremonies as well. It's considered a very powerful medicine in the Amazon. And what an ikaro is it's, the best way I can describe it is, it's like the energetic imprint of the plant or the spirit in the voice of the shaman. And shamans either inherit these songs from their teachers, or they receive them during diets, where they'll wake up and the song will be there. And so when they sing in ceremonies, they are, the first thing they're doing is actually setting up the conditions under which the ceremony can take place. So they're calling the allied spirits that they need, and they're getting the situation aligned so that the work, their intention of the evening, can be done. Then, as the ceremony progresses, they go through different stages of these songs, and there are many different kinds. Our master has songs that are related to the landscape around his healing center, which is called Mayantuyaku, songs for the, there's a boiling river that flows right beneath the place where the ceremonies take place. It's heated from geothermal activity. And he has a song that he sings to the Linda Quebradita, the river that flows below, because it's a healing force in the ceremonies. They will also sing songs from, for example, our master is an Ashaninka Indian, but he will sing Shipibo songs, which is another tribe from the area, that have their own power. And the wonderful thing about ikaros is the only way you can understand their logic is by experiencing them as that energetic imprint. And then you see that each one is kind of a portal to a kind of healing energy or a kind of experience. When a song for a plant that you're dieting, for example, I drink the Kame Renako plant when I go down because I have issues with my lower back, and it's good for mending the tissue and restoring bone and stuff like that. When he sings the Kame Renako Ikaro for me, I can feel the plant like growing inside of my body, and you can feel it as well when you have a personal healing. They will sing over you, and you can feel the Ikaro actually being put inside you. And that's what the shamans are intending to do. They're intending on taking the energetic pattern of the plant spirit or the animal spirit or the god, the spiritual being that they're working with, and putting it inside your body.
And then hopefully it finds fertile ground. To grow. Do you see, a common thread through all the different traditions, that you visited, from the churches to the different, indigenous groups?
Yes. But that brought up another distinction that is important about Amazonian shamanism as well. Not all people who work with plants are benign. There are also people who work with the plants in order to damage other people, to hurt them. And this is just the classic world of hexing and voodoo attacks. And
very much a part of traditional Amazonian shamanism.
When I first went down, I was kind of like, oh, yeah, right, because I'd experienced the plant medicine primarily from a transpersonal, psychological viewpoint. before I really arrived in the deep jungle. And I had thought, okay, you know, there are archetypes that are in our minds, but I didn't really give credence to the fact that these things can be experienced as having their own realities in absolutely concrete a way as you experience your car or you get a headache. This is just the way things are. And so when we got there, that's when we really began to, or I really began to encounter the reality of what they call brujería as well. And so there's a whole practice of cursing and
the balance of the light
weapons
and the dark
they use, and it's another layer.
Robert?
Yeah.
We're moving towards the end of our show. We have a few minutes left.
Okay.
Would you please take a minute to give our listening audience a brief inspirational message?
Well, I can say what's inspired me the most and
please
continues to inspire me. I think that that nature itself wants to work through us, and that we are in a way a plant. You know, we are the growing intelligence of this planet. And the thing that I learned in the Amazon and that we've seen confirmed over and over again in the experience of people that do this work is we can be coming from a much bigger intelligence than we are. And we need this intelligence now because we're the human race and the planet itself is in peril. And so you don't have to go to the Amazon in order to get that intelligence. You know, I think we overlook many things that are just in our environment right now. And it's really a matter of opening your eyes wherever you may be. So, I think that's really our work wherever we're at, is to attune ourselves to the deeper roots, the deeper drive that is going through all of creation right now.
Thank you, Robert. We've been talking to Robert Tyndall, author of The Jaguar That Roams the Mind, an Amazonian Plant Spirit Odyssey. The website, www.roamingthemind.com. roamingthemind.com, which I'll be following with great interest. And thank you so much for being with us today.
It's been great. Yeah, thank you for your intelligent and informed questions.
Oh, our pleasure.
Yeah.
This is Temple of Health Radio Show. We come to you every Saturday. You can also hear us on the web at www.plasticcoast.com. And we wish you a great day.